most of the families I talk to, a chunk of their money is going to healthcare. If you're a self-employed person, man, if you have three kids, you're probably spending $2,000 a month or more just on insurance premiums. This is a huge part of people's lives. Some people are spending $1,000 a month on supplements. Some people are seeing alternative providers that are charging them a bunch of money. Some people are just seeing regular old family medicine doctors, but they're spending a ton of time and money on healthcare. So this is a big issue for people.
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
It's a special week at the Abraham's Wallet podcast. It's been this type of special week before. You're not a new face to the podcast, but this week we have the beautiful, I mean, just to say to the, we know that about 92% of our listeners listen only on audio. This is one you're going to want to catch on video because we have the lovely and talented Dr. Amelia Parrott on the Abraham's Wallet podcast this week. Hello, my love.
Hello. Happy to be here.
For the listener who might be new to the podcast and married to a physician, and I would say that's a unique thing, especially in the crowds we run with. It's like, this is a profession that my wife, Amelia, you can talk about it if you want, but like, you really walked into this with very open hands and said, it seems like it would be a strange choice for a woman who wants to prioritize her home and her family, but the Lord just kept opening these doors. And so you kind of obediently walked forward. And now what that means is today you are an OBGYN that sees patients for just kind of their daily women's health needs, as well as delivering babies. You're also the medical director of the Salt Lake Pregnancy Resource Center. So you get to take part in helping women who might not think there's other options for them if they have an unexpected pregnancy, help them kind of with resources and options and even medical care. And then once in a while, you even do a little legal consulting. So you've got like a whole bunch of things going on. Is there anything I missed as I introduce your credentials?
I mean, as of, you know, a couple days from now, I'm actually the lead physician in my group. So I have taken a leadership role in my group. And one of my favorite perks of being a physician is that I get to teach the fifth grade maturation class to the girls in my daughter's schools, which is probably one of the highlights of the fact that I have a medical degree, that I get to talk to them about becoming women and what it means and how we're created in the image of the Lord. And all of the messy things with puberty make a lot of sense when they're told in the context of what our faith says about who we are as men and women. So that's probably one of the big perks, I would say.
And you and I have talked a bunch about this, but like, Steve, as we were going through this series, I've mentioned your like hot tips from Dr. Parrott on all sorts of things, but we just kind of felt like it would be remiss of us to not mention or bring you into the conversation, because Steven and I have talked about all this stuff about physical capital. And I happen to be married to what I think certainly one of the most attractive physicians in the United States, but also an incredibly intelligent person. So I wish I could say we were going to go diving into the science and you were just going to silence all arguments against whatever it is that you want us to kind of do health-wise. But you and I were talking about this, and we talked about all the different avenues of health that we could explore. And I just acknowledge on the front end of this episode that there's a lot of sacred cows in this space, and people develop kind of their opinions and all that. And so as you and I talked, it became more and more clear that like other Christian healthcare providers that we have run across, you've come to some interesting conclusions when it comes to what's important in healthcare and what might be, I guess, more of an illusion or even something that's coming not from the Lord. So you said to me you've said this a bunch, and I just want to start out kind of asking you a question. You'll regularly come home and say, Mark, I saw 24 patients today, and half of them spent most of their time crying in my office. And yeah. Are you a psychiatrist? Do people come to you because they're dealing with depression?
I mean, they come to me because they're dealing with depression, but I'm definitely not a psychiatrist.
Yeah, you're an OBGYN, so they come to you for like a pap smear or a new pregnancy visit. And so what do you think's going on there, and how does it inform the way we even start to talk about, I think the one piece of physical capital we haven't really touched is how does somebody deal with healthcare? And even as a financial planner, most of the families I talk to, a chunk of their money is going to healthcare. If you're a self-employed person, man, it's like, if you have three kids, you're probably spending $2,000 a month or more just on insurance premiums. This is a huge part of people's lives. Some people are spending $1,000 a month on supplements. Some people are seeing alternative providers that are charging them a bunch of money. Some people are just seeing regular old family medicine doctors, but they're spending a ton of time and money on healthcare. So this is a big issue for people. What kind of, where should we start if we know that you're having this experience as a provider of people coming to you and they're really not expressing the things I would expect somebody to express at a checkup with their doctor?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is there is a lot of unhealth and unwellness in the whole country and in people of varying degrees of faith, varying degrees of actual physical health. And I think there's a lot of people that feel unwell and are really looking for answers. They're looking for solutions. They're looking for venues that they can find something that makes them feel better. And as a physician, they're going to come to me and I'm happy to talk and listen and walk through things with people. But I think I just realize as I go through this that so much of the things that people are suffering are not necessarily directly related to medicine and its ability to fix it. And when I was kind of thinking about how to approach this, because I want people to see doctors when they're sick, and I want there to be an understanding that the Lord has gifted us with technology and knowledge and resources that really can make a difference in people's lives, I kind of divided it in my head into two thoughts of what can medicine do and what can medicine not do? But I feel like before I even get into there, I kind of want to put a little bit of a label on what I would define medicine as. And I think medicine in our country has been something that you seek when you do not feel well. It promises some sort of healing, either from a physical perspective or an emotional perspective, or sort of anything that sort of that would provide relief to the situation that you're in. And I think medicine is what we're going to talk about, but I think it's very easy to substitute the word medicine with essential oils, with specific strict diets, with specific supplements that you have to take at a certain time every day, with a specific exercise regimen that if you don't miss it, you're going to be destroyed. So I think it's really the idea that as people in the sinful world, we're looking for things that provide us healing and restoration. And medicine is one of the things that people will look for. Now, I think it's tricky because I don't necessarily think that medicine can fulfill all of the things that it's been given the assignment to fulfill, just like all of those other things I mentioned can't either. So I want to kind of dive into those sort of two topics. What can medicine do and how can I kind of help people navigate and optimize their experience, and what medicine can't do to kind of get things rolling?
You sort of said people are coming to medicine for things that maybe medicine can't provide. So maybe we start with that. Yeah. What is medicine good for? What are you guys good at doing?
So I think we're really good at fixing acute problems. That's one thing. You break your leg, you should go to the doctor. You have an ectopic pregnancy, you should see a physician. you have cancer, you should see a doctor.
You guys aren't that good at cancer.
I know. We're mediocre. we're slightly better. It depends on the cancer, but usually better than nothing.
Those are nuanced combinations. Cancer, way better off for having seen a doctor. But some cancer seems like it's mostly just a good luck.
Yeah. But I do think medicine is very good. You're laboring. Your labor's going wonderfully. All of a sudden, there's an emergency. Your labor's not going wonderfully. I'm there for you. Things like that can be really useful in the context of medicine. I also think that there are times that medicine can provide what I would describe an imperfect salve on things that we have done that have made ourselves ill. So let's say you're obese and hypertensive. Do I think you should probably take medication for the hypertension? Yes. Is taking the medication for the hypertension that's secondary to your obesity actually addressing the problem? No, but it's going to try to optimize your health in the current state that you're in. The other things I think is that medicine can very easily sort of lean into what I would describe as the occult, which is an understanding
we
that...
We talked about this on a former episode, so you're not okay. Introducing a new topic to the audience, but I do think it might be shocking for the listener to hear a physician talk about medical care as the occult, so I'm slowing down here for a second. Will you explain what you mean?
So a cult is basically a description of a dependence on anything outside of the Lord for your salvation and your sustenance. Oftentimes it's associated with like secret knowledge or an adherence to a strict practice of something. I think we saw this a lot during the COVID era, that there was a lot of, I just believe in science or I believe in medicine. And it became kind of a mantra for a much more a belief system that really felt more religious in nature than science. So I do think that medicine, just like essential oils, just like chiropractic, just like all these other things, can take on that role in people's lives if it's given to them. So I do think that's one of the risks with medicine, and that's something that it can become.
Okay. One thing that we said, I don't know if it was the first or second episode, was that anytime, I guess, medical issues become identity, you're really on the border of something that is not from the Lord. I guess the way I see that is like, it's hard to deny that in our culture, having some specialness, if you will, maybe some disability or disadvantage. I don't know if this is a product of the sort of Marxism that we saw emerge in the last 10 years, but like some disadvantage was actually viewed as a positive. It gave you social capital. So now I remember you and I were on vacation. Where were we when they were talking about special dietary needs? It was somewhere. Oh, it was Mexico. We went on our anniversary trip last year. They said, what special dietary needs do you have leading up to this trip? They reached out to us ahead of time. And we said, none, you crazy people. Why would we have special dietary needs? And I think that now it's truly like a badge of honor. Like I had, you know, as a kid, I've talked about it on the podcast before, I was diagnosed with ADD. And this was in the 80s. And that was like a new and cutting edge thing. And it's like, it was not good for me to have that label put on me. But some people now have taken these labels and internalized them to make them who they are. So that could be, I am gluten intolerant. I am, you know, what are the ones that you hear as a doctor that people come to you and say, this is an identity I have accepted?
I mean, I definitely think that some of the mental health disorders become an identity. I think depression and anxiety become identities. Not saying that they're not things that people walk through or deal with, but they become who they are. Or you become someone who says, you know, my hip always hurts. I can never exercise because my hip always hurts. And so it sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy as people walk through claiming something that's not theirs. I mean, let's be honest. The Lord has made an insane machine in the human body, and it functions almost perfectly if we feed it things that are reasonable. We take good care of it. We allow it to sleep. We surround it with community. It really should be just running in the background as we walk in the steps that the Lord has for us. When we read through scripture, we don't see examples of a lot of the physical ailments that people claim now. We don't even really see descriptions of what they ate. They ate bread. They drank some wine. You know, we're told that all food, that they had some fish. I think we're constantly told that the Lord has created something beautiful and that we're made in his image. And I think there should be a freedom in that when we're walking in alignment with where he has us.
Okay. So to just summarize where we've been, medicine is good at acute emergent care needs. So if I have a major disease, if I have a injury, I should go see a doctor. Mm-hmm. If I've been trying to birth a child for the last 48 hours, I should probably go see a doctor. Whatever those things are that are outside of kind of normal human experience. But it sounds like you're telling me people are coming into your office and they're looking for something more. They're looking to medicine for something else. What are they looking for / what is medicine not good for?
Okay. I think this is, I'm going to kind of invite people into my brain, and I want to be encouraging as I share these things and not have people hear judgment or condemnation. If you hear judgment, take it to the Lord. He'll take care of you from there. Medicine cannot cure bad habits. We cannot fix them. So if I have someone who is struggling with obesity, they're struggling with overeating, they're struggling with not exercising, there is no magic pill that I can give you that will fix that. Now, let's be clear, there are new medications that have been very interesting, but you take those medications away and the problems that led you into that situation are still there. So there has to be a degree of radical self-ownership when people are walking through these things that allows them to both honestly and kindly look at their current health status and figure out how much of it has been self-imposed and how much of it has been things that they have allowed to dictate their lives. So if food has become a source of comfort, then that is actually a problem. And it's a sign of unhealth, usually spiritually. Now, I can talk to you about nutrition all day long, and most people who struggle with these things actually have really good knowledge of what they should be eating. There's some people that don't, but most people do. So then always the question is, why? Why are you eating that way? Why are you not taking care of yourself? Why has exercise become something that's not there? And oftentimes, those are the result of deeper spiritual issues. Lack of forgiveness, bitterness, non-reconciliation with the Lord. These sort of deeper things can really make it difficult to have physical health. So spiritual health can have a huge impact on your physical health. And I can't necessarily address those spiritual needs in my capacity as a physician at a hospital. So that's where I think it gets very difficult, is people are legitimately hurting and they have physical consequences from things that are actually happening in their spirit.
You know a lot and have actually listened to a lot of the teachings from Stephen's mentor, Peb Smith, who was an MD, family medicine doctor, saw patients all the time, and he became so convinced of what you're saying that he stopped seeing patients in clinic and just said, I want to full-time minister deliverance. And you haven't made that choice yet. So I think my question is, what percentage if you had to sort of stick your finger in the wind and say what percentage of physical ailment that's out there falls into the this is a medical situation, that medicine has something good that's actually healing to offer, versus a habits situation where it's like you just lack self-discipline, you are eating junk, you refuse to exercise, or you stay up until 2 a.m. and you have to be at work at 8 a.m. so you don't sleep, versus there's actual spiritual forces, there's a doorway that there's been an unclean spirit or something like that that's come in and is causing damage, and that is actual deliverance needs. Like, explain the I know you don't know perfectly, but like based on your experience, you probably see people way more than most of us that are dealing with actual health issues. How would you kind of spread out the occurrence across those three categories?
Yeah, I mean, I think the minority is the first category that you described, which is acute medical emergencies, unavoidable, need to be addressed.
Well, wish that you had been an orthopedist who just like fixed broken bones all day so that you were actually doing something? Do you feel like bummed that you're trying to provide healthcare and the problem is not medical?
No, because I actually think I get an opportunity to talk to people about the other two categories. Okay. I think that I like the fixing of things. So when I have problems that are solvable, yes, I would like to fix them. You come into the emergency department, you need a surgery that I can do. I'm a girl. I'm happy to do that. You're in a distressed labor situation, happy to help. Like, those are things that bring me a lot of joy. But I do think that the other two areas, for me, I do still feel that there is lots of opportunity to encourage and speak truth to people, even just in my clinic, giving them a different story about who they are, giving them an understanding that these things that they feel like are insurmountable aren't actually insurmountable. It's very difficult when you're talking to someone who's, 40 pounds overweight, for them to even imagine, or 100 pounds overweight, or 200 pounds overweight, for them to even imagine how they might feel if they made tiny decisions in favor of their health over a long time. So I'm there to try to encourage people that it isn't actually ever too late to fix some of those habits, to make changes to your family dynamic and your family culture, and that there really is always opportunity for us to move towards health. So I kind of view myself in a lot of my capacity as a cheerleader for people as they're kind of trying to walk through this journey of life. The spiritual stuff, I think, is more challenging because obviously with it comes an understanding that I think there's a God. I think that there's a salvation that's attainable for us. And in that salvation, we can actually shed some of these spiritual burdens that we carry that aren't ours. For women, a lot. The things that I see a ton, I see a lot of anxiety, which is simply fear. That's not fear of the Lord. I see a lot of self-hatred, and that often will sort of manifest in terms of not being able to care for self or not thinking that your body is worth caring for. These are all things that are from the accuser, right? So Satan knows targets. He knows how to kind of get under our skin, and he knows how to distance us from who we were created to be in the image of God. And so those are a lot of the downstream effects that I see as a physician.
So ostensibly we're a podcast for fathers or husbands.
That's true. Right. I forget.
No,
yeah,
but
right.
If you're a dad listening to this and you as an OB-GYN who talks mostly to women, you said that like anxiety, self-hatred, fear, these are like the things that you see every day over and over causing actual health problems in women. What would you say to a guy who hears this, who's like, how can I better lead my wife and care for my wife if I notice that there's things like that? Is it a health thing? Because what I see as a financial planner is a lot of times a well-intentioned husband goes, my wife is super anxious. She has anxiety. And I don't know, as you know, Amelia, the healthcare machine is happy, whether it's traditional healthcare or alternative medicine or naturopath, it's happy to jump in and say, just give us so much money and we will offer you solution after solution after solution. And they might not any of them work, but we'll keep giving you more things to spend money on until you're broke. I see that all the time. And so you have this unique spot. You get to like see inside the hearts of women, and you have this medical training, which most people don't have who view the world the way you do. What would you say to a husband whose wife is going, I'm struggling with debilitating anxiety and I guess I need to go to the doctor to try to fix it. Like what was a husband supposed to do?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a nuanced question, so I'm going to give you my nuanced answer. I think sometimes medicine can provide tools in the context of anxiety.
Like what?
I do think medications for short durations of time can actually be pretty helpful. I think that there are times that counseling and therapy for short amounts of time can be helpful. But I often will encourage, especially if it's a husband, I think that there's a lot of opportunity within the home to understand why she's feeling anxious. For a lot of women, that anxiety will come because they're trying to control things in their environment that might not actually be theirs to control. So if you're a husband and you're walking with a wife who's feeling overwhelmed and anxious, then there's a very good chance that she has more on her plate than she's supposed to have or she's equipped to handle at that moment. And so my encouragement would be, as a father or as a husband, you're going to figure out, what do I need to be offloading here in order to support her? The other things I think you can do are help put guide rails on in terms of the sort of tendency to fall into things that promise healing that might not actually be able to fulfill it. So if you all of a sudden realize, my gosh, your grocery budget is $1 million or $3,000 because my wife says that she can only eat these specific plants at this specific time of day, that is a really big red flag for you that it's time to actually intervene and provide rescue and deliverance for your wife.
Husband provides the deliverance?
I mean, he can. Wow. If he's got the right tools. I mean, the Lord provides the deliverance, but he can at least recognize the story that's actually happening in the household. I think the other tricky thing is that, you know, when we talk about marriages, I mean, I don't know how we're on the topic of marriage, but you often have women that don't feel loved and men that have a hard time feeling respected. And so if you as a husband see your wife walking through all of this, it's worth asking, hey, does she feel loved in this marriage? Like, am I caring for her? Am I providing for her? Does she have the tools and the resources that she needs to be successful where she is, whether she's homeschooling, whether she's working, whether she's got kids in school? Does she have the things that she needs in order to feel cared for and understood? Because anxiety is just fear of things you can't control.
That's good. Again, I don't think this is the main point of this episode, but like, you and I have talked about it a lot. I've yet to run across, believing or unbelieving, a family where like the wife works and the dad stays home with the kids, where anxiety, some level of anxiety, depression, fear wasn't like actually a huge problematic area in that family. And it makes sense based on what you're saying, because I think that the Lord created men and women with roles. And it's even why when I kind of introduced you, I said, like, this is a strange situation that our family finds ourselves in. And we actually even disciple our own daughters to say, this probably is not the way you should angle to go in your life. It's like a career that requires a ton of education and kind of locks you in for a time period to work in order to pay back loans that you'll have to take to do this. So, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but like, it's very real that the way the home goes and the dynamics between you, I'm talking to the dads and husbands, like you as a husband and leader in your household, actually have a real and tangible and measurable in lab tests impact on your wife's and your children's health. Like, I think that's true. Do you agree with me, Amelia, or am I just ranting now?
I agree with you. I think working as a believer and someone who believes that my main goal is that my home is functional, it's a really difficult, heavy burden for most women, including myself, to bear. And I always ask the Lord, let me know when you're ready for me to leave. I'm happy to leave my work. It is not the definition of who I am. But I think for a lot of women, the things that they carry are more than they're supposed to carry. And it's not necessarily because they are married to husbands that aren't capable, but sometimes it's because the wife might even be a little bit quicker to recognize things. And so she might recognize things and pick up burdens and not give her husband a chance to step in. So if you're seeing that as a husband, I think it's a really valuable time to sort of sit down and understand what kind of a role can you play in creating an environment where your wife can actually be really healthy and thrive, where she can eat healthy food. She has time to exercise and care for herself. She has people outside of just her spending time and encouraging her children, not saying that her time isn't important also to spend with the kids. But there's so many opportunities as a leader that you can actually recognize and see and fix and help your wife or help lead her and give her space to be healthy. And it shouldn't cost $1 million.
So you've kind of said, here's what healthcare, medicine, whatever is good for, and here's what it's not good for. We could do 4 hours on what it's not good for. And like, I don't know, at some point, I really think Abraham's Wallet will roll out the critical skills course, which goes into a lot of depth on how to find healing from a lot of these things that have actual physical health manifestations. But since we only have you for an episode here, I do want to take advantage of kind of your inside view on medical care. If we had 5.5 minutes or so, it's for you to talk a little bit before we get into, I've got a hot seat question for you. And then I want to save a little time to just talk about how our family has navigated some of these specific issues. But like, before we get off the topic, what do you think we need to know about navigating the medical stuff? So when I have actual issues that are indeed medical, like to make it very personal, I had high blood pressure and I couldn't kick it. And like, I could kick it if I went vegan and made my whole life revolve around a highly restrictive diet, but it was miserable. And my doctor kind of kept going like, man, you know, there's a drug out there that's going to just make your life so much better. You have a genetic disposition here, whatever. I assume there's a lot of those types of things. When somebody concludes, now is the time to see a doctor. What should they know in order to navigate the system in a way that doesn't let them fall into some of the traps, whether it's with traditional medicine or anything else?
I mean, I think that the reality is we live in a world where our bodies are broken. So there are times that we will encounter medical problems that are not a result of sin. Sometimes you get high blood pressure, you got to treat it. When I think about entrance points for traditional medicine, I think that your goal should be minimal visits and a very finite goal for what you're trying to accomplish in the care that you're having. So in your situation, it means that you're going to find a doctor who says, yeah, you probably need some blood pressure medication. Here's your blood pressure medication. We might do some labs, and then I'm going to see you once a year. That feels very appropriate for me. I think where people get into trouble is if they get into situations where they're paying exorbitant amounts every time they're being seen, where they're paying for excessive amounts of laboratory tests, that the provider that's ordering them may not even actually be able to explain to them. I will briefly touched on hormones, but I'm not going to dive in that hill. I can't tell you how often I have people that get hormone testing by providers. And there's one really simple question I always ask them, and it helps me understand, did the provider who ordered this hormone testing understand anything? And I say to those women, what day of the month were you on when your provider drew those labs? And they'll look at me with a blank stare and they'll say, what do you mean? And I'll say, did your provider ask you what day of the month of your cycle you were on when he drew those or she drew those hormone levels? If the answer is no, you just have to run away because you're seeing a person who doesn't understand the test that they're ordering. I think if the expectation is that you are purchasing things from the provider that you're seeing that puts money into their pocket and incentivizes them to sell you things, to me, that's also pretty concerning.
We talk about that in financial planning all the time. Don't see a financial planner who gets paid when they sell you an investment product. I think that is a fairly obvious conflict of interest, good life rule. And I was talking to you last night as we were kind of talking about this, what we wanted to cover. But like, even it doesn't have to be some naturopath cuckoo that is doing this. I went to my family doctor who is great. I love him. He is really, has been a great doctor for me. But he, to my as best I can tell, doesn't know the Lord. And like, he told me, because I was talking to him about prostate cancer. It runs in my family. And I was like, here's my questions. What do I? And he said, you know, if you're feeling anxiety, the solution to this is you should just see me more frequently. And now I'm not really covering that out of pocket for the most part. I have insurance that covers my primary care doctor. But it did make me stop and go, this is a problem. It's just the world trying to solve the world's problems without the king. But I was thinking, you know, the solution to anxiety, and that's what he was saying, if you're really anxious about a healthcare issue, studies have shown that one of the things that helps is to see your doctor more frequently. And maybe that's true, because most people that become doctors like actually care about people and they want to take good care. Just like I care about people and their budgets. And I want to like talk, okay, we can work this out. We can succeed and the world's not falling as you think. But I thought to myself when he said that, I was like, man, you're telling me that like medicine and more medical care can solve a problem that at the end of the day is fear and anxiety. And I just said, that's a little sad to me, because I don't think that that's what medical care does. So I just wanted to say, it's not just the, you know, the chiropractor or whatever that wants to put you on a 6-month plan to see them twice a week and charge you 10 grand. Like, we hear about that all the time. It's also like, anything in this realm can turn into ultimately like the occult, which is come trust me to solve your problems instead of trusting the Lord.
And I think too, there's a huge sort of vacuum of true community that leads people to feel really lonely. And so I think that, like you said, most medical providers actually do have good hearts. They want to help. They want to help people feel better. They want to solve problems. And I think sometimes the encouragement is, if you are feeling these things, that you actually got to look at your community around you and figure out, do I have people around me that actually know how I'm doing, who can speak truth into my life, who can call me to repentance when I need repentance, who can hold me to accountability? Those relationships are so much more valuable than the ones that you're going to have when you see me once every 6 months. But sometimes people are lacking those or don't have access. And so I might be the only person they're talking to about this. So I definitely, when I talk to people, I always say, you know, medicine cannot fix, it can't fix bad habits. It can't fix bad nutrition. It can't fix bad sleep. And it cannot fix bad community. So if those things are lacking, you can see me all you want. I'm not necessarily going to be able to provide the solution that will actually bring you closer towards health and towards feeling better.
So to shift gears, as we kind of move through what I want to cover, Stephen had one burning question that he wanted you to answer, and so I'm going to do my best to sort of present that to you. He said, I really want to know for Dr. Parrott if she could just grab the average Joe off the street and look him in the eye and tell him three things that he doesn't know. Because, like, I think everybody knows you should eat less ice cream or drink less alcohol or you should get 8 hours of sleep. Maybe people don't know that, but, like, I think people who don't sleep enough kind of know I'm tired a lot. They know if they should lose a bunch of weight, that they should probably lose weight. They might not know how, but they at least know, like, this is an issue. But what are three things that people don't know that, like, you would say, this is actually something you should be aware of? And then we'll get on to what our family does on some of these things.
Okay. I'm going to throw a couple out there. You can take them or leave them. The first thing is being healthy should not be complicated or overly expensive. I think it should be pretty straightforward. I'm going to throw another thing out there that I feel very strongly about, especially as I talk to women all the time.
Wait, whoa. Back up. We're not ready for number two. Number one.
I know.
What do you mean? Explain.
I mean that your body is this machine that the Lord has designed to run efficiently and beautifully. It should not consume your brain, your money, your time to care for it, assuming things are going the way that they're supposed to. Obviously, there's extenuating circumstances, but for the most part, your body's supposed to just do what it's doing. And if it's requiring you to spend your whole day planning around what food am I going to eat, when am I going to exercise, and become sort of consumptive, then we're off the chain.
So where do people fall off of that and overcomplicate it? What are the most common things? I know there's people who would never walk into your office. They're like, I'm out on all medical stuff. And so we won't even worry too much about them. But, like, what about average Americans? Where do they tend to overcomplicate it or overspend or whatever?
I don't actually think average Americans. I think it's a small percentage of people that I'm talking to. Most people, I think, if they ate better food. So, you know, we talked about, I think you used my phrase, which I think I stole from someone else, that says eat foods that are ingredients and don't have ingredients. That's one of the big things that people don't do. They'll often buy processed food. They'll eat out. So much of this revolves around nutrition and activity. People sit at desk jobs all day long. They don't take walks. They don't move their bodies.
Can you tell me what you told me the other day about taking a walk after food? Because that was crazy. And it made me go, what are we doing? Not just doing air squats as a family after every dinner. What did you say? Just that fact.
Yeah. Okay. Brief. So after you eat, you actually improve the functionality of your insulin system by having some form of activity. So after you eat a meal, you can take a 5-minute walk, but you can actually, there's good data that says 10 air squats after you eat your meal improves the way that your body processes the food that you just ate. It's sort of a complicated biomechanical model that figures out which food gets absorbed and stored, which food gets used up, how does it get stored? Does it get stored in fat? Does it get stored somewhere else? All these things happen in a better manner if you are
10 air squats. 10 air squats takes 18 seconds, maybe, and you're telling us that would change our health.
Wow. It would be a start in the right direction.
If that's all you get from this episode, I think you got your money's worth.
It's pretty good.
Okay, move on to number two. Number two thing you want to tell the average American.
Okay. You got to lift some weights. I can't emphasize enough the importance of carrying physical heavy loads on muscle mass, bone density. In some ways, it's almost even better than just straight cardiovascular exercise, although I think that's good too. And when I talk about lifting heavy weights, for most people, especially women, when they start, it might be your body weight. That might be where we're starting for heavy weights. but that should not be where you're finishing. The crazy trends in the 90s of tiny little weights that you lifted 500 times, those are no good anymore. The data actually is very much in favor of, for women especially, lifting heavy weights and getting really strong. It's so protective of your body. For women, as you go through menopause, you lose the estrogen stimuli. That's really what helps with muscle preservation and bone growth. So as you walk through that, you can counteract and prevent some of those losses.
Just so that we can kind of break, I'm not asking you for what kind of weight you're putting up, but like, I think some people hear that and they still go, oh, like, does that mean like I need to squat with like a kettlebell in my hands? Like, how heavy are we talking?
I mean, your goal is going to be to get as heavy as you can possibly get to. I don't have a specific number because the caveat to all of this is that you got to be really careful with form. And so I think having community around you, if you have people in your community that are really good at this, talk to them, figure it out, go to the gym with them, have them walk you through some of these things. I think the gym can be an intimidating place for a wife. So if you as a husband are really comfortable in the gym and you're really good at coaching and you have good resources, bring your wife with you. This is a great opportunity to encourage and actually strengthen her in her walk.
If you're out there listening to this and you are a guy, there's something called the standards 1.0 that we kind of say this is like, and people hear this and they lose their minds on the internet, but this is actually any adult male without actual physical limitations. So you don't have an artificial leg or something that's actually going to prevent this from being possible. Pretty much any male that trains properly, really quickly too, within a year, can go from no training to the standards 1.0. I'll give you 2 years if you need it. But the standards are that you can deadlift 405 pounds, squat 315 pounds, bench press 225 pounds, and strict press, which is like a military press, 135 pounds. That's just one time for each of those. And I guarantee you it's possible. You might hear this and you might be scoffing, but that's possible. I think for women, it's a little different. I wouldn't necessarily say you have to deadlift 400 pounds, but like a 2x body weight deadlift for a woman is actually very doable with proper training. And like you said, and like we said in a previous episode, it won't just do good things for your physique and your appearance. It also turns your body into a calorie burning machine. So if you like pizza and ice cream, which we do occasionally, we have to keep that in moderation, but like you can eat more of it when you have more muscle and you won't gain weight, at least not the type that you don't want. So I'm all in on the lifting. Okay. Number three.
I'm going to say sort of facetiously, misery loves company, which means that if you're going to make changes in this area, you got to get everybody on the same page. So if you as a family look around and you realize, oh my gosh, I'm overweight, my kids are overweight and not active, my husband's overweight and not active, you all have an opportunity to make changes. It's very difficult to be successful if you're the only individual in a family unit, even I would say in a community, who has decided to make changes forward. So if you're hearing this podcast and you're thinking, gosh, actually most of my unhealth is a result of sin and bad habits, then there's a really good chance that the people around you are struggling with the same things. And there's such opportunity for growth and healing as a family, and really to see things change and shift. I'm sort of the eternal optimist when it comes to what you can become. And I think that the Lord has designed the body in such an incredible way that if you just sort of make a little bit of an attempt to care for it, you will see things start to improve pretty quickly. And then to be able to even have that be a story that you as a family can share or you as a community can share about how you have sort of been able to take these bodies that the Lord has given you and use them as a machine.
That is also true on the flip side, that like poor decisions love company, because sometimes, whether it's like becoming obsessive about medical issues, that seems to run in groups or whatever. Do you see that? Like, when you're talking to patients, like, where'd you get this idea? Well,
yeah, for sure. I mean, let's be honest. When I started practicing, you know, 15 years ago, there's always like a list of old wives' tales that people have for trying to go into labor. So I'm going to just give an example and then we can kind of roll with it. And I remember about 10 years ago, I had this lady come and tell me, okay, so I did the curb walking. And I remember looking at her and being like, you did the what? She's like, yeah, my friend told me if I curb walked, it would put me into labor. And I still didn't really understand. So I made her explain it to me. So she's like, you know, if you walk and you have one leg up on a curb and one leg down on the cement, and then you just keep walking, and then that's going to put you into labor. And I looked at her and I was like, your friend does not like you, because that is the meanest thing you could make a pregnant lady do. And I have to tell you, it has never put anybody into labor, despite the fact that this sort of lie has perpetrated itself. Now, 10 years later, I still hear it. But I certainly think the same thing can be true about some of these sort of occulty ideas, that if we just all buy this right supplement, then we're going to be healthy. Or if we all just only do this exercise, we're going to be healthy. So all of this is, of course, in the context of moderation. But when you have community around you that is providing balance, they're providing correction when you're starting to veer down that path of occult, whether it's medicine, whether it's oils, whether it's midwifery, whether it's something that's kind of pulling you away from the salvation that's offered through the Lord, then the community can be really helpful in that.
We have just a couple minutes left. Is there anything that I didn't ask you? You can take the rest of the time with that. Or that you want to say about like specific stuff we've done in our family? You got about 4 minutes to put a bow on this one.
I think the biggest thing I want to make sure people hear is that medicine can be a really useful tool. But again, it cannot provide salvation for us, and that there is a healer and a physician, and we can know him, and he can actually heal us. I have seen the Lord heal things and do things in medicine that don't make sense to any of the physicians. And that is always such a moment of joy and delight for me as a physician, to be like, well, yeah, of course that person got healed. They know the healer, and the healer fixed them. So I am 100% in favor of praying for miracles and seeing the Lord actually do amazing things that medicine can't do. So I think that's one of the coolest perks about actually being in medicine, is the miracles become even more miraculous, because I can understand what had to happen in order for that to be something
that's
that
great.
Occurs.
All right. Well, wife, thank you for being on the podcast. I think that the reason that we've focused on physical capital for a few weeks in this series is because, A, it's a place that a lot of your budget touches this, whether it's the food you go buy, whether it's the money you spend on activities, and it's the club soccer fees, or it's the gym membership, or it's the healthcare stuff, which is increasingly taking up more and more of our budgets just as American families. It's a big deal with your money. And we think your physical capital is more important than your financial capital. So that means if you're dead, it doesn't really matter how much money is in your bank account. We want you to kind of remember what our friend Vijay said, which was the goal here is to steward our bodies well so that we can have maximal experience and enjoyment of the multiple generations, Lord willing, that we'll be able to see on this earth. So as long as we're walking around here, we get to participate in all the things that God has provided for us. So that's why we care about this. I think medicine is good. And I don't know if it's 15% or 5% or 25%. But like what you said, Amelia, today is that medicine has its place. And it's never, ever, ever supposed to be your identity or your first place you run when you're encountering things that are actually spiritual in nature, or maybe even just bad habits in nature. So that's why we covered this today. That's why I wanted to bring you in. Thanks for being here. Guys, ladies who are listening, we just bless you to go forth and run your home and your dough like biblical bosses.